Great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for, you know, taking the time to interview me. And also for taking the time to read the book.
Oh, I thought it was a riot. There are parts where I was just howling. Really nailed it.
Oh, thank you for, thank you for the compliment, yeah.
You're welcome. When did you decide to write a novel?
So I began writing this novel. It truly has been a labor of love. This novel only took me 12 years to write from start to finish. Which sometimes tends to take a long time when one is also trying to hold down a full-time job.
Yeah,
you know, truly is more like it was a passion project for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
But I began to think about writing this book, actually, when I landed at my first job, fresh out of law school.
Uh-huh.
And so my first job was at one of these large, huge corporate law firms in Manhattan, where, like my protagonist, I was working in the corporate department there. And I began to, you know, I was still in touch with many, many of my friends from Amherst, actually,
sure.
And also from law school. And when we would get together, in the rare times when our new busy work life could allow us to get together, particularly my women friends and also friends who happen to be people of color working in corporate America like myself, when we put together our, you know, common experiences, now that we had graduated from Amherst, graduated from, you know, various different kinds of grad school and landed in corporate America, we began to notice that, first of all, began to notice a lot of familiar patterns in terms of who tended to sink or swim, you know, at these kinds of in these kinds of settings. And secondly, there just were so many stories and anecdotes that rang so familiar to all of us across industries, actually, that we started to just say amongst ourselves, well, you know what, someone really should write a book. Someone should collect all of these so that truly other young students who come after us do not need to waste so much time or spin their wheels for so long trying to teach themselves how to successfully navigate a corporate culture like this. And so that's sort of when the idea started kind of forming in my mind. So basically I just started jotting down thoughts, you know, from time to time. And if I observed an anecdote or situation, I would jot it down, you know. So that's how it began over a decade ago.
Do you think that, in fact, you've written a book that does tell somebody how to navigate it? Or do you think you've written something that says, look out, they're going to get you?
Oh, I like that question. You know, I actually literally just half an hour ago came from a lunch event where I was speaking at a law firm. And someone, a young man, actually asked exactly that question. He said, so what then is the message of the book? Should we be disturbed and concerned that this is the disturbing sort of plight of, you know, particularly young women of color in corporate America? Or is this more like a how-to? Is what he asked.
Uh-huh.
I certainly don't think of it as really a how-to, but I have been really gratified by the number of times, particularly law students who have just come off of their first summer working at a law firm, have come up to me at a book event to say, thank you so much for writing this book. I felt much less alone after reading it. And when I asked them what they meant by that, a lot of them just said, you know, I was going in with no idea really what to expect. It's very, very easy at a lot of these, not just law firms, but just any corporate setting for a young person fresh out of school, it's very easy for that person to feel extremely isolated if that particular culture is not one that is, you know, familiar to you. So don't think of it as a how-to. I definitely have from more than one young student, they have viewed it as how to successfully, you know, remain true to oneself in some sense while you are trying to succeed in this kind of professional workplace. So,
no, I think that last point is really the right one. One of the things I think the book would do would be to show young people who are going into the profession that they're not crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
That they may be paranoid, but maybe they have reasons to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that many of the things that seem to be going wrong are not their fault.
Right, right.
So they can't change themselves to become what they have to be.
Yes, yeah. You know, because one of the notions in the book that was one of the themes it was important for me to address in the book is this notion of passing, right, or covering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever members of a non-traditional, you know, group entering one of these corporate white shoe environments, sometimes you feel the need to downplay certain minority group or outsider group attributes in order to pass, in order to kind of more seamlessly blend in. This can be anything. I actually, just when I was speaking at Columbia Law, the other day, a young woman came up to me and talked about her experience. She's African American, and she wanted to know whether she should straighten her hair, for example.
Oh, gosh.
You know?
Yes.
And so anyway, we had a very, you know, interesting, you know, conversation about that, and she was very concerned. It's very, very important to her that she gets to know a firm well enough prior to committing to any one firm, whether that particular firm is the kind of environment where she would always feel the need to straighten her hair, you know?
Right. Right.
So anyway, so that theme of passing or covering is really what is of importance to me in the book.
Well, I thought the other thing that you made a point of a number of times was that Ingrid has a really great need to be loved, to be approved,
yeah. mm-hmm.
particularly by men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this seems like something that is very much gender-based,
uh-huh.
and that it can either make your life better or, I think in Ingrid's case, a whole lot worse.
Yes.
Another kind of passing.
Yeah, that is, yes. Yeah, actually, I like that way of putting it. It is another kind of passing. I wanted Ingrid to be an imperfect heroine, an imperfect protagonist,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's just reality. None of us is perfect. And it's actually, for a writer, it's just much more interesting writing about flawed characters than perfect people.
Right.
And so there are no perfect characters in this book. Ingrid, by the way, is someone who has, as you probably noticed, harbored her own prejudices as well, you know?
Yes.
So she's not exactly free of harboring her own
not at all.
Stereotypes
right.
about other people. So, but I definitely wanted the complication of her constantly seeking, you know, approval, and particularly, you know, the complication of romantic relationships, romantic entanglements in the office, too, to
yes.
be a part of the,
yes,
of
I
the
think
dialogue.
Yes, I think that's really smart.
So.
Because I think that the sense of office entanglements that young people get from television is that
yeah.
they're really kind of a lot of fun.
And,
well, they may be at the moment they're happening, but they're fraught.
Right, right.
I thought you did a great job with that.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
The other thing I wanted to say that I thought you did such a wonderful job with was your attention to things like body language
mm-hmm.
and body positioning, who sits where, who sits next to whom,
uh-huh.
whose arms are crossed, whose arms are kind of relaxed and open.
Right.
I thought that really worked extremely well.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
You know, I don't think that's something that everybody notices, and it certainly
mm-hmm.
is not something that often shows up in novels.
Huh, interesting. That means a lot to me that you just said that, because I actually really remember from a lot of the texts that we read in our reading gender, reading race class together,
yeah.
actually, a lot of attention paid in, you know, class to the language of the body and the,
yeah.
the visual cues like that. And
right.
I think I have always been someone who really liked that kind of detail in the
yes.
in the text that I read, just for pleasure. And so particularly for this particular novel, where our protagonist is observation is her thing. I mean, it's a very observational novel. So,
that is part of her ability to survive.
Yeah, that it is. It is her main, it's actually her main skill, survival skill there.
Yes.
So just observing, carefully observing, and then carefully imitating. She has perfected the art of passing that way. So it's a very observational novel, and so I'm glad that you commented on that, because the body language, who sits
where,
who is talking to whom, and
right.
in what order, and who is associating with whom, is of utmost importance in these settings. So
yeah,
yeah.
The other thing I wanted to, I think it's linked, is that Ingrid consistently wears either black or white. There is no sense of Ingrid as wearing, I don't know, wild pinks.
That's interesting to me, because
that
was not
life.
Huh. That's interesting. I actually, that was not particularly intentional, but yeah, now that I think about it, she does always tend to wear black or white, and I cannot remember a description where I had her in something a vibrant color. Yeah.
No, I mean, she does put on sweats at one point, and you figure, well, they're probably not black and white, they're probably gray. But you don't say gray. You just say she puts on sweats.
Right.
I just thought it was interesting. When get her dressing for, you know, anything that she has to do with, that's associated with work, it's black and white.
Well, all the easier when you're in neutrals, it's all the easier to blend in.
She puts on pearls.
She's
got diamond studs. It's just perfectly corporate.
Right, yes.
But I do think, you know, that one of the strengths of your novel is that it has broad appeal. I mean, I don't think that this is true only of corporate life, but rather that it's true of any kind of institution that has hierarchies that have been around for a while.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. That has actually been one of the happy surprises, both to myself and my publisher, is that we had obviously whenever you are launching a first novel, one obviously hopes it will strike a chord with readers everywhere. But what we did not expect was how the corporate community itself would embrace this novel. That has been a surprise to us. That has been a surprise.
That's interesting.
Yes. How the legal community and their corporate business clients have glommed onto this novel has both surprised and thrilled us, because what they have done is, so I've now spoken at some, you know, 20 law firms, and I have actually had to take time off from Time Warner to do all of these speaking engagements at law firms and universities and law schools. And one of the reasons that these law firms have said that they want to invite me in to speak to their clients and their attorneys about the themes of this novel is that this is the first book that they have heard of that, because it is written as a novel and, as you mentioned, kind of like a plot-driven, novel with broad appeal, it's done in, you know, a light way. This is not a polemic, you know. It's not written
No.
So because of that, a lot of these law firms have discovered that it makes it safe to talk about these issues. In other words, it makes this book, from their perspective, it has made this book a safe conversational starting point to have some meaningful, hopefully meaningful and useful and productive conversations about how to make it a better, more inclusive experience for their diverse attorneys and their women attorneys. And that to me has been one of the highest compliments, you know. So.
Yeah, it's very gratifying.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
But one of the things that strikes me is that this is not something that supposed chick lit, a phrase I loathe, does. That usually chick lit sits in its own little box of type, and it doesn't go any further than that. And instead, this is moving way beyond that sphere.
If I may be very honest, my agent and I feel that was its very problem, and why I got so many rejections from people, from editors who told me that they loved the novel, but unfortunately they just couldn't convince sales and marketing of how to position this novel in a marketplace.
Oh, I see.
Publishers, like many of us in this challenged media climate, are creatures of habit and predictability. They need to know that something's going to be a hit in order to take it on.
Oh, yeah.
Frankly, I was getting a lot of – we were meeting with a lot of pushback because, as you just said, this novel does not, unfortunately or fortunately, fall neatly into any of the buckets that the publishing industry was used to seeing. So, for example, as you said, was it chick lit? Well, it does, you know, talk about this young, spunky heroine who is trying to succeed despite certain you know, challenges at work. There's sex in the novel, and there's you know, office intrigue and romance and, you know, romantic relationships, etc. But was it chick lit? No, because what I had tried to do was write a page turner about identity politics, and nobody knew how to do that. Like, you know, no one had heard of. It's kind of a hard pitch, right? Agents generally do not take editors out to lunch and go, okay, here's the pitch. It's a page turner about identity politics. it's a very hard pitch. So what my agent was meeting was resistance from a lot of editors who said, I love it, but I wish I could do it, but I just cannot convince our marketing. They don't know what to do with it. Is it Lauren Weisberger? Is it Devil Wears Prada? Well, no, because this woman is a smart woman who's about to make partner at one of the top, most powerful corporate firms in the world. She is not a 23-year-old editorial assistant, you know?
Right.
So, but then they were kind of like, okay, well, then because there are smart details about a billion-dollar corporate transaction at the center of the story, is it a John Grisham novel? Is it a legal thriller?
Oh, God.
Which, weirdly, Amazon calls it a legal thriller, which is kind of amuses me. Anyway. And then thirdly, what confused people and made it even more, you know, exacerbated the difficulty in finding a home for it, was that the protagonist happens to be non-white.
Right.
She is a double other, in other words. She occupies two
of the
categories
of
outsider status. And so I was getting a lot of, frankly, I was getting a lot of pushback from agents and editors who needed it to be either much, much, much more Chinese or take the Chinese out of it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I got several comments from some agents who wanted to know, would I ever consider rewriting it, but not from the point of view of a minority? To which my answer was, no, because that would defeat the entire point of the story. You know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's kind of
Mr. Twain. Have you ever thought of making Huck Twinna a young black woman?
Exactly, right?
No.
Right, Michelle? No, I haven't. So there was one person who told me that she would love to take it on, but she wondered if I might consider rewriting it from the point of view of a white woman, right?
And she thought that would change it how? Would she actually say what she thought?
She thought that would make it much more sellable because she thought it would have greater appeal then.
A greater appeal.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A broader appeal
mm-hmm.
if there were a blonde woman at the center.
Oh, Jesus God.
Yeah. But this particular person also told me that she said, maybe it's just me, because it's one of her pet peeves. She actually literally used the term pet peeve. She said it was her pet peeve when talented new writers always felt the need to write about ethnicity in their first book.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I remember sitting there on the phone and thinking, okay, this is not the agent for me.
Oh, my God.
But I'm lucky that I ultimately did find
somebody who believed it.
An agent and editor who both really, really get it. It was quite stunning because we did come across that pushback quite a lot, that either they wanted it to – because publishers know how to market Amy Tan, and they know how to market John Grisham, and they know how to market Lauren Weisberger, but they did not know what to do with this mishmash of Amy Tan, Grisham, Weisberger, you know?
Right.
One of the highest compliments, actually, that people have said upon publication, several people have said to me, you know, it really is kind of in a genre by itself. You know, it's kind of hard to describe. And I will take that as a compliment when they call it hard to describe.
Oh, I think you should. I think anything that transcends a genre is a good thing to be, transcending that kind of a, you know, categorization. I guess I just find it ironically horrible that, you know, I said that I thought the novel had application to all kinds of non-corporate cultures which have a long, and here we have it in publishing.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can just imagine that they have some young intern-type minority woman or man who is reading novels submitted by the same and sort of making judgment on them based on, would a white person read this?
Right.
Does
this
appeal to a white guy? And the horror of being in that position.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I hadn't thought of that before, what it must be like to be a young minority publishing professional, knowing that you might fall in love with a book yourself, but that you just cannot, you know you will not be able to push it through.
Right,
you know?
There's nothing you'll be able to do.
Yeah.
And that the hierarchies there are just as icky But the person who gets hurt is not only the young person who's trying to negotiate this job, but then some hapless author.
Yeah.
Who will be sort of seemingly done in by another person of color, but of course not.
Right, right.
I mean, it just seems so awful to me.
No, I never, you know, one of the great pieces of advice in this whole long road, this whole long journey that my agent has given me, among many good pieces of advice he gave me, is never to take a rejection personally, because he said it does not have anything to do with you, and sometimes it doesn't even have anything to do with the content of the book.
Yeah, right.
So he said to keep that in mind.
Yeah,
and
that is smart.
You know,
I think that's true. Do not take any of this even vaguely personally.
Right. So,
but it's hard not to.
But it is hard not to when you're kind
of, you put so much into it.
When you're a writer and you've really put yourself out there, and these themes are really, really important too. Yeah. So.
Well, Helen, are you beginning to think of yourself now as a writer? I mean, in other words, let me put it this way. Not simply that you have written a book, but that you have taken on a different identity than when you started.
Oh, I sort of love that question. I think yes, I do now think of myself as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very odd to be able to say that, because for a long time, and actually this was a great piece of advice from another author friend who told me this recently. She said that it takes a very long time, even after publication of your first book, to think of yourself as a writer. You know, at least she found that, and I now know what she meant by that statement. It's kind of a significant leap to go from thinking of yourself as somebody who wrote a book, who was lucky enough to have a book published,
versus
thinking of yourself as a writer.
A writer,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
That seems like you really turn a different corner.
Yeah, you know, truly, I'm really proud of this book. I'm really glad that Oh, thank you. And also, I'm really glad that I waited until I found the right agent and the right editor who got it, rather than being so sort of desperate to get it published that I changed certain things to make it much less Chinese or much more Chinese.
Right.
You know. So first of all, even though would I have necessarily chosen for this journey to have taken 12 years? Well, no. But now that it has, I'm really proud of the end product, because it truly, this is the novel that I, when I was 25 and first landed in corporate America, this is the book that I wish I could have read then. And so I'm just really proud of it. Yeah. So.
Well, my hope is that it's going to, and I'm very serious about this, that it's going to end up something that gets taught in law schools.
Oh, well, it's very funny that you say that.
Yes.
I mean, I would love to see that, too. And, in fact, because now that I have been speaking at a lot of the large law schools, several people have said, well, this would go right along with, you know, Class X, or I'm going to show this to this, you know.
Yeah.
Conversations are already starting to happen about that. I would love to see that if that happens.
Oh.
Because I think that the possibilities for helpful dialogue there are really kind of really
too.
Great.
Helen, if I were still teaching a course that I used to teach with Rose Olver called Gender Labor, this would be the book in it.
Oh, wow. Thank you for saying that. That sounds like a fascinating course.
It is a fascinating course.
Yeah.
And, in fact, Helen, Rose and I are putting together an anthology for it now. But but this is a perfect book for, I have to tell you, all kinds of women's studies classes.
Oh, well,
so
I would love to see that. Well, thank you very much for saying that.
I did in a heartbeat.
Oh, thank you. I learned actually yesterday that a number of liberal arts colleges have reached out to the Speakers Bureau asking about that. And so,
wonderful.
So I really hope that you know, others feel that way too. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. So you're doing a big speaker tour now, is that right?
Yes. So I, as I mentioned, I have taken a couple of weeks off from Time Warner, and I have been invited to speak at a lot of large law firms, their client corporations, and, you know, universities and law schools.
Great.
So.
Great.
Yes. So.
Well, Helen, this is probably a good time to wind down.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thank
really
you so much
you...
for these, you know,
oh,
really thoughtful questions. Yeah.
I hope to see your name in bright lights.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for all the kind things that you've said.
You're very welcome. Best of luck.
Thank you.